House Committee on Consumer Protection to order. It's February 7th, 2008, and today we have carried over House Bill 3630 from yesterday and wanted to make sure that everybody that wanted to provide public testimony on this bill had an opportunity to do so, since our committee did run over a little bit further than I even thought. So with that, I would like to open the public hearing on House Bill 3630. And we do have a person signed up, Rick Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Seems like I did leave a little too quickly yesterday, but I appreciate the opportunity to say just a few words in support of House Bill 3630. I had been at least initially participating in the mortgage lending work group and was a member of the committee looking at the rescue scams. Unfortunately, I had to make a decision as to how I might best use my time, and I decided that perhaps I needed to be working on some of the issues that weren't being discussed by the work group. But my absence is not intended to suggest in any way that we do not support the two bills that have come forth from the work group, taking action against these individuals that perpetrate the mortgage rescue scams. Obviously, is a good thing. Providing better information related to options available to borrowers who are facing foreclosure is a good thing, and we just want to be, AARP just wants to be on the record as, in fact, supporting this bill. And did I identify myself for the record?
You said your name, but not what you represent.
Okay, very good. Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations, AARP Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick, for coming by and making the effort to support this bill. I think it is a absolutely great bill, too. And I appreciate the work you did put in on it.
Well, and I also would like to take the opportunity of thanking you and particularly Representative Bonamici for the work that you've done on this bill and with the work committee, and also to commend the industry for their enthusiastic work on this particular part of the problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Nelson.
Well, I don't know if this is really a question, Mr. Chair, but you know, yesterday I found myself thinking, you know, how in the heck could this federal government bail out all those, you know, federal savings and loans, and we can't help these people? And so, you know, this probably isn't the instrument to use, but it seems like to me that there ought to be some protection, whether it's a bond or a whatever you call it, errors and omissions insurance, you know, that these mortgage brokers and everybody else has to carry out. Because, I mean, these people have, you know, we heard yesterday how we should have consultation, you know, and before and after and so forth. But there's no recourse in it other than, you know, I've spent all my money, you know, the most I'll ever have in my life for the biggest item in my life. And when you leave me, I have nothing. So what would you recommend?
Well, the only thing that I think I understand your concern, and I would say that I had hoped that the mortgage lending work group, as it suggests, having to do with mortgage lending, would have had more opportunity to discuss those types of issues before this session. And unfortunately, the discussion was somewhat limited for, I guess, a variety of reasons. I hope there will be further discussions after this session related to that and other issues around what seriously, it obviously is a very serious problem. Thank you.
I have a quick question.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bennett, I don't know if you were here yesterday when Mr. Knox testified, but were you here for his testimony?
I'm not sure.
A homeowner who lost his...
Yes, yes.
We've heard that many of these scams are targeted to seniors. Have you been hearing from your members about problems in this particular area?
Not specific to the rescue scams. The contacts that we've had both here and particularly with our national office and around the country have really had to do with the loans themselves, mm-hmm. and the fact that older homeowners are clearly targeted because, in fact, they have significant equity in their homes. It's kind of like Willie Sutton, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. And you do see older homeowners, limited income, but and their only asset being their home. And when they're faced with major health care expenses or major renovations on their homes or for other reasons where they need significant dollars, their home is their only mechanism for paying for those costs. And there are a number of options available to them for accessing that equity, but sometimes the marketing that's used and so forth seems to make the subprime loans to be the easiest and quickest way to deal with the problem, and sometimes they really get stuck in a serious situation where, in fact, they lose their home because of it. And like I said, I certainly hope that we are going to have more discussion on that part of the problem as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Appreciate you coming forward once again. Is there anybody else that would like to provide any testimony on 3630? Blank stares. Okay. With that, I would like to call up somebody from DCBS, and whichever one would like to come forward would be fine.
Department of Justice also.
And perhaps they could drag up the Department of Justice with them. Scored points there.
I think you'd get two for the price of one today.
You said two. I didn't hear three. two for me, yeah.
Thank
it's
you.
A
bait and switch. Thank you, gentlemen. I know this is a bit impromptu, but I didn't get a chance to debrief, I guess, a little bit from our public hearing yesterday, and in which we had a wide range of conversations and testimony and. I know that we're working on amendments right now. They're obviously not ready today, and whether they're ready tomorrow remains to be seen. They very well may be, and they won't be. But we did come across a couple of new issues that we've had some offline discussions about, the real estate investors and how this may impact them, and hopefully we're able to come to some way to bring this bill to a closure and not negatively impact the industry by I guess jumping out with trying to regulate yet another perhaps issue at this point, but still wanting to maintain as much continuity in this bill and just kind of wanted to hear your thoughts on how we can accomplish bringing this bill together to its final form as soon as possible, so that we can move this, what I think is a great piece of legislation, onward. It's an open-ended question, or I suppose.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Lou Savage, Senior Policy Advisor with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. After your meeting yesterday, we pulled together a small group that met this morning with Ledge Council to work out those issues that were raised in your hearing yesterday. And from my point of view, we have resolved all those that we can resolve for this bill. I think we're ready to go. One of the issues that we discussed at length this morning, which I'm not sure we actually can resolve, is that slice of folks out there who are actually purchasing homes that are in distress are not doing a lease back, but are just purchasing the home directly, what sorts of obligations should they have to the homeowner? And the bill doesn't directly address that, but I think this is a good start. And from our point of view, that particular niche, we really ought to be doing some more thinking about that in terms of how what kinds of protections ought to be available for those folks who are in the positions of selling their home because they're in foreclosure and there really are no other options, and they're selling it to a third party. What sorts of protections do they need? If it's a leaseback, this bill directly addresses that. If not, there's a little gray area. And Representative Bonamici was involved in the meeting. I don't know if she wants to add anything on that.
I do want to add that one of the concerns that we had was we want to make sure that if people are acting in that real estate investor role, we want to make sure that they're, of course, being honest with the consumer they're dealing with. And we've been assured by representatives from the Department of Justice and the Department of Consumer and Business Services that there are laws to address them. For example, the Credit Repair Agency statute, general unlawful trade practices, and laws against misrepresentation if they're misleading the consumer they're dealing with. So we were concerned about scooping up too many people who were just buying the property. Hopefully they won't be counseling, doing the foreclosure counseling, because if they are doing that foreclosure counseling, they should be within the statute. But the statute prohibits the foreclosure consultants from buying property. So I'm comfortable that we've come up with a compromise. I'm also confident that we're going to be watching it very closely, people in the enforcement agencies, after this bill passes, to make sure that foreclosure consultants aren't somehow or another morphing into real estate investors to get around the law. But I'm comfortable with the language we've come up with that requires compensation from the homeowner at some stage during the process in order to become a foreclosure consultant.
A question, hypothetical case of where, you have one of these real estate investors that puts out yard signs and posters saying, we're here to help. We can buy your house, or if you're, in foreclosure, please call 1-800 whatever. And, portraying themselves that they're there to help people that could be looking at a foreclosure by buying their house, basically advertising for themselves, I suppose, as an investor, and then seeking these people out. Does that practice fall under any kind of current regulation or licensing requirement? I mean, because they're operating as a business, I would assume are like a business model. I don't know that they are.
Mr. Chair, this is David Tatman with the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and what you've just described, I think, falls outside any regulatory category that we oversee. I believe, and Mr. Shull can address this further, the Unlawful Trade Practices Act may come into play in terms of how representations can be made and whether intentional or inadvertent confusion is sown. But that does not, somebody in that situation is essentially a third-party buyer, somebody that's buying the property. It may result in a positive benefit to the person who's facing foreclosure, but they're not necessarily giving them advice or consulting with them how to improve their credit so they don't fall under the credit service organization laws, and they're not necessarily paying off through the consumer's funds creditors, so they're not a debt consolidation agency. So they don't meet those two regulatory bodies. I think at this point what we're trying to figure out is we're trying to get our arms around how broad this activity really is when somebody is advertising that we will buy the house from you. If it remains in that arm's length situation, that's fine. They're going to go down, talk to the bank, and what we understood was they will negotiate what they call a short sale, in which they'll buy the property from the bank. Bank will lose a little bit of money, but it will take the original buyer, if you will, the borrower out. And so the borrower's able to preserve their credit for the most part, and the bank is off from having to hold this property. So in that respect, it does have the benefits you heard yesterday, but it is not a regulated process. My concern is, it's the same one that Representative Bonamici raised, it's how close do they come to riding that line of claiming to be a white knight that they're going to help this person not only get out of that foreclosure situation by buying the property, but we can fix a lot of other problems, or I'll be able to repair the problems you've already done to your credit and things like that. As they get closer to that line, getting into that consulting role, then I think we're getting closer to a debt consolidation person or a credit service organization person who has to be licensed with us. I will tell you, one of the proposals we're looking at to bring forward in 2009 is that situation where somebody we expands the definition of a debt consolidation agency, because I think we want to pick up people who don't necessarily hold money in trust but are still providing that kind of advice. So we're moving forward in that direction, but I don't think we're quite there yet, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure I've answered your question directly, but as far as I can tell, they don't fall with any category right now.
Okay. And let me take that just one step further, excuse me, before, because I really have to concentrate on remembering my thoughts. So in the scenario that was presented yesterday, not only did that person do that particular, you know, transaction, but then would go one step further and have another property that they'd done the same thing to and acquired through a short sale from another person, and then say to the person that they just bought out of the foreclosure process, I have a house that I think I can get you into that you can afford, or maybe that wasn't the same, but just saying, I have another house I can sell, I think, you know, would you like to buy this other house that I have? I mean, is that at that point it seems like they're, you know, dealing in you know, multiple pieces of property as an investor. At that point, are they regulated?
Well, I'm getting pretty far afield from what my limited expertise is. My understanding is, as long as it's an owner sale in real estate, there's no limitation on that. But what you're describing is somebody getting closer and closer to being a real estate broker. That would have to be taken up with a real estate agency. But I have to tell you, based on a very limited understanding, and Mr. Schull can correct me, there's a limit on the number, and I find this ironic, a limit on the number of times a person can buy a car and then sell the car as a curbstone car dealer. And the Department of Justice and State Police, I don't know what it is, it's 3 or 5 a year. But I don't think there's any such limitation on somebody doing that with real property. And that may be something worth looking at.
And Chair Holby, members of the committee, Andrew Schull, Oregon Department of Justice, Financial Fraud Consumer Protection Section. Mr. Tatman's correct. There are limitations in terms of obtaining and selling cars that aren't for your personal use and not being licensed as a dealer. And, you know, whether that's an issue for the real estate agency or another state administrative agency, that is definitely something to take up. But to expand on our two folks who testified yesterday, part of the discussion and part of the issue this morning was that it definitely is a gray area. And arguably, as the bill is currently written, they may be considered a foreclosure consultant, but part of that was because of the compensation language, and it wasn't clear that they were ever intended to be included in that definition. Based on the fact that the compensation, as they testified how they make their money on the second sale of the house, the compensation is not coming from the homeowner. And what's been alluded to about other violations of law, if in the process of these sales this person does in fact make misrepresentations or causes a likelihood of confusion or any other numerous things to the homeowner where the homeowner doesn't understand the deal, they may have in fact violated the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. They may have also made one too many or gone too far in their representations, as has also been alluded to, in terms of saving a person's credit or repairing a person's credit, so they may or may not fall under the Credit Services Act. And then, of course, if they go into a lease or buyback option, a subsequent conveyance with the homeowner, they'd then fall into the second portion of the bill, which is the equity purchaser. So that was the discussion that occurred this morning, and again, it's something that It's not clear it was intended that they fall into a foreclosure consultant definition when it was written, even though as written it appeared that they might in fact fall into it, assuming, you know, we understand the facts of their transactions. But I think what was basically decided was that to include them in foreclosure consultant may not be the proper step in terms of what we know right now.
Can I follow up on that?
Representative
Bonamici. I just want to follow up a little bit on that, and for the people, especially for the committee members, because it really is a policy choice that we need to make. Because, I mean, the people who were here yesterday and testified actually buy the property, but they don't lease it back, so they don't fall within that second part, the equity conveyance part. They did fall within the definition of foreclosure consultant, but under the bill, foreclosure consultants can't buy the property. So what we struggled with is, do we want to be able to allow them to buy the property? Now, they said they weren't licensed. They could, alternatively, go get a license, a real estate license or a mortgage broker license, something that requires them to be licensed, in which case they would be exempt if they're acting within the scope of their license. But it was our sense that there are legitimate people out there who want to buy property, and we don't want to take that away, but we want to make sure we're getting at the people who are actually doing foreclosure consulting. It's a difficult issue, because if we left the bill the way it is, the people who were here yesterday wouldn't be able to buy the property, because they are foreclosure consultants. They'd have to make it sure. They'd have to change the way they do business.
And Chair Holvey, if I might add one more comment to that, the other issue is, what that made us realize is that there may be cases where in the 120-day period, particularly in a good market, you simply have a what we would deem as a bona fide purchaser. You know, the homeowner says, I don't want to go through a foreclosure sale, puts the house on the market. You know, he finds a bona fide purchaser. Essentially, the bona fide purchaser could make several comments about the foreclosure and would arguably then be a foreclosure consultant, particularly if that individual was then looking to turn around the house and be compensated by the second sale of the house, as the bill was currently written, as the bill is in the dash ones. So, we all knew in discussing this morning that definitely was not the intent. If somebody wants to walk away from their house in that 120-day period and actually have a legitimate sale where they may in fact make money, nobody wants to prevent that.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Maybe I just don't remember. Maybe we've gone over this. But I just keep feeling like something is just vastly missing, because if, you know, someone is giving me $150,000 or $200,000 and I am a terrible risk, you know, it's not my business to know their business. So, I should be able to proceed with trust. Do you know what I'm saying? But if they're bums, you know, they're selling me this house, they know I can't afford it. They know that within 6 months to 10 months, they're going to get it back. I mean, there's something the matter with this equation that I don't think we're dealing with. And protecting these individuals from, you know, the only time that doesn't matter is when you win the lottery. You know, it doesn't matter what you know.
If I may, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, I think what you're describing is certain lending practices. What are they doing at the front end when they make the loan? Are they making a well-considered loan, or are they just saying, hey, we're going to give you some money for a short period of time, knowing full well this doesn't work, and we're going to end up taking that back?
Exactly.
The purpose of this bill is, frankly, to protect people who may have been put into a loan they shouldn't have been in the first place from getting victimized a second time by somebody who's a foreclosure consultant or somebody who is going to take this home under very unclear, shady terms and end up sticking it to them again, if I can say that. And so they get punished twice. We don't want that to happen. I think what you'll see, Representative Nelson, is that that bill that is over in the Senate right now, Senate Bill 1090, and it's scheduled for a hearing. I think you had an informational hearing last night, and it's scheduled for a public hearing tomorrow. Is it is designed to address those types of practices. People who are what we call subprime or purchasing a non-traditional loan, what has to be considered when making that type of loan. And I think that, so you've got two tracks going parallel to address your concern plus our concern about people getting victimized at the back end of a loan.
Different bill.
Different bill.
Thank you. I think is there any other questions from the committee? So, you know, my hopes are, and I'll talk to you after this meeting's over, just briefly, so, and check with Chuck and LC, and you know, see that we're all on the same page and that our amendments are going forward, and we're not going to try to rein in all these real estate investors into this bill as foreclosure consultants and forbid them from buying the property. I think that's an issue. I think is a different issue that we don't really want to get into here at this time. Would be my guess.
Mr. Chair and gentlemen.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you. I think Corey already did this for us. Or one of you. How many foreclosures have we had here in this state over this last year? We already asked that, didn't I ask that?
I thought I saw some information on that.
Or am I dreaming?
The numbers.
I just, you know, I'm curious about a pool, you know, that can help these people. I mean, we have emergency assistance in so many different ways, except I don't know, this one doesn't have any.
Mm-hmm.
Corey, did I? Go ahead and identify yourself.
If I could, Mr. Chair. Corey Streisinger, Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, we did provide you with some statistics attached to my written testimony yesterday.
Oh, yesterday.
And about what's going on in Oregon with respect to foreclosures. Between 3,000 and 4,000 foreclosures at the moment, I believe, and we're anticipating about 12,000 foreclosures in the next couple of years. So it is a significant problem. A number of states that have experienced much more severe problems have looked at mortgage bailout types of funds. That tends to be a very expensive proposition, and that's not one of the recommendations that we have brought forward from the work group today. But you may want to ask the Housing and Community Development Department. I know that they are looking at they have the ability to do some bonding in certain circumstances to make refinance options available. So there is some discussion of those areas, but we are not, given the nature of the scope of the problem here in Oregon, we're not at this point proposing a bailout fund. We are trying to assist consumers, and this bill in front of you does part of that, in getting in touch with counseling resources that can help them explore their options for refinancing and getting them in touch with their lenders, many of whom have forbearance programs now that will allow the borrower to restructure the terms of the loan to make it more affordable. So that's the approach we're recommending at the moment.
So a quick follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
So heaven forbid, could be me, that, you know, tomorrow my house goes in foreclosure. How do I know who to call? Where do I get this information? Where do I know that there's a reputable person? I'm one of these 12,000.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, if this bill that's in front of you passes, you will get a notice in the mail from your lender telling you who to call and giving you resources to call.
So someone will have checked them out totally, and are they bonded?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, the resources that you will get are, you will get the following. First of all, your lender will have to provide you with a contact phone number for the lender to talk about what programs they've got in terms of maybe restructuring your loan, and also if you want to pay off your loan, what amount you would have to pay. So the lender will be required, or the trustee on behalf of the lender, to provide that information. Second, we will provide you with a hotline number, which will be run by the state, either our agency or housing or possibly some third party, which will provide a list of foreclosure counseling resources, which are HUD-approved community credit counseling organizations, primarily in communities throughout the state. And then additionally, we will provide information about how to find legal representation through the Oregon State Bar and Legal Aid.
I'm Excuse me, I just wanted to say good. Yes, thank you.
Follow-up?
Yes, okay, very good. I'm just so glad that, you know, we're giving people some help. You know, it makes me mad when we can help huge, huge banks, but we can't help the little man with the piggy bank.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, that's what we're hoping that you will all be voting on soon to help us do that.
Thank you for that. And just to follow up myself on the discussion on the real estate investor issue that we were faced with yesterday, I would hope that you would take that back to the governor's task force as it continues to discuss that particular item. I'm not willing to say that needs action or inaction at this point, but I think it's something that needs to be talked about amongst the industry and the consumer advocates as well. So I'm hoping that discussion will take place and be an ongoing discussion at that point.
Mr. Chair, one other item that was a concern that was specifically raised yesterday about the foreclosure notice, the issue that that the amount may change. The small group that met this morning, we worked out some language which would make it clear that, in fact, that figure would change. And so as far as I know, that issue has been addressed with the Oregon State Bar section that raised the issue.
Thank you. And then so the Oregon State Bar section is debt creditor section or whatever it was are okay with that proposal, and that satisfies their issues.
Yes.
Good job.
And it meets plain language standards.
well, as a matter of Representative Riley, in fact, we revised their language so it would be plain language.
Thank you.
Yeah. Has it been run by our plain language specialist? I guess it will be eventually.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, I believe it says this number will change.
Good.
Thank you so much for the update on where we're going with this, and we'll see how fast we're able to get this accomplished, and hopefully we'll be able to move this bill out tomorrow. If not, I'm sure we'll have it for Monday. Thanks again for your attention to this bill and your perseverance in dealing with all the minutiae of this bill. I really appreciate it. So once again, I will ask if there's anybody else in the crowd that would like to say anything. And seeing nobody jumping or waving their hands, everybody's completely happy with the progress we've made and has no issues.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson?
Yes, if this is on a work session, could you tell me...
This is a public hearing.
Public hearing? Okay. Well, could you tell the public then what the amendments are?
Well, we haven't got the amendments.
What they particularly...
Well, I'll bring the. It's not probably good for me to do it right now, but a lot of people can probably do it better than I, including Representative Bonamici and DCBS and Andrew Scholl and who've been working on these amendments pretty intimately. So we sort of went over that somewhat yesterday, but
and
I can't remember anymore.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, again for the record, Andrew Scholl. Dave Tapman can expand on this from BCBS, but the three primary issues were, one, the real estate investor, so the amendments will deal with that to clarify that they don't fall into foreclosure consultant under most circumstances. There will also
just
be...
Just a minute, let me just get this.
Oh, sorry.
Please, I'm a little slow. A real estate investor cannot be a...
What we hope the amendments will do is clarify that as presented yesterday, real estate investors in most circumstances will not fall into the definition of foreclosure consultant. Again, it's a gray area. There will be times when they do. There will also be times when they fall into the equity purchaser category. The second one is a definition of net proceeds, which has been an ongoing discussion. This deals with when homeowner has entered into a lease buyback option. They don't exercise that buyback option, but the house is subsequently sold. After that subsequent sale, the statute requires that the equity purchaser provide certain funds back to the original homeowner, essentially the equity that they had in that home. We hope the amendments will clarify and specify the definition of net proceeds, and in fact, I think they're actually changing the terminology, and it will be equity recapture or a similar term. And then the third one is the debtor-creditor revisions, or the revisions primarily to address the debtor-creditor section's concern with the notice.
What is that?
The notice is the statutory form that the director was just speaking about, which will inform consumers, here's the information that you have a right to obtain, here's people who you can contact.
I mean, there are changes they wanted in that.
Correct, sorry.
So these are just minor adjustments to the Dash 1 amendment that we already have before us, and I'd like to just have that more in-depth conversation on those amendments when we have them in front of us, hopefully tomorrow.
I think it's such a critical issue that I just hated to get the amendments in one day and vote on it in one day, and when we haven't even had a chance to study.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's a very, very tight time frame.
Yeah.
So the Dash 1 amendments have been out for a bit, and so those are essentially what we have right now. And tomorrow we'll walk through the additional amendments, too, beyond the Dash 1s.
And section by section.
Chair Holden. Certainly you can, ask your questions about any section if you wish.
And Chair Holy, Representative Nelson, we apologize. We really don't have notes and whatnot to hand to you because we had the privilege and rare opportunity this morning to actually work directly with legislative counsel. So.
How'd you manage that?
Chuck Taylor is a very nice man.
I'm just kidding.
Thank you very much.
Might help to be at the Department of Justice.
No other questions. I am going to, or testimony, seeing none, I'm going to close the... Excuse me, I'm not closing anything yet. Do we need to carry this over again?
We are posted for a work session, and I just wanted to talk about the process a little bit. We're posted for a work session for tomorrow at 1 o'clock in anticipation of having another set of amendments to look at, and with the hope that legislative council will get those amendments in a fashion that we can look at. So that's where it stands right now. I guess I would advise people to check. If we don't have amendments tomorrow, I don't know if you're going to want to meet. So
we
would
meeting.
Probably
Friday too. Yeah.
We would want to just postpone and move things over till Monday, because I think they'll be. I'm 90%. Certain from my discussion with Chuck that we'll have something tomorrow, but there's you never know around here.
Well, if we don't have
any plans out of town,
what time is 4? Noon?
4 session at noon.
Yeah.
Probably going to have a long discussion about toys.
Hmm. Well, we'll certainly make that call. We may end up canceling if we don't have the.
I just want to make sure
we don't have the amendments. So, do I need to carry this over?
Yes, it is.
Or we're already scheduled.
We're already scheduled.
We're already posted. So,
we'll be posting it for Monday if we don't have it ready tomorrow.
Okay. So that's clear to everyone what we're up to. So my hopes is that we'll be able to walk through the additional amendments that are coming forward, so people are comfortable with them, as well as the Dash ones that they already have, and that we'll be able to move this through tomorrow. So that is my goal, my hopes, and I appreciate everybody's patience with this, and appreciate legislative council and their hard work in trying to accommodate this tight schedule in this special session.
Chair Holby, let me also say that as soon as committee staff obtains the next set of amendments, we'll send it around by email to the committee members and to the members of the worker.
Thank you for that.
So watch your email, your inbox. If we get the amendments, we'll know we're meeting.
Right? Might want to order an extra ream of paper if you want to print it out.
Yay.
I hate that.
With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3630.
I'm always going to close back today.